Coming up today at 1, a 95-year-old veteran just back from the World War II Memorial remembers fateful moments from his time overseas.
He says, you would be dead,
if you had stayed with me, because guys on either side of him had been killed.
Hear why he believes God was watching over him. And here's some of his memories from serving as a surgical technician. He'll also tell us about his experience with Central Valley Honor Flight. That's today at 1 on News Talk 580 and FM 105.9, brought to you by Humana, proud to honor our hometown heroes.
This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the show where each time we take a trip back in time and listen to stories from our greatest generation. We want to honor our veterans for their service and the sacrifices they've made. We want their stories to be preserved so we don't forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, it's fun to listen and learn, like we will today with Leonard Heinrichs of Dinuba, California, a 95-year-old World War II veteran just back from the inaugural Central Valley Honor Flight. What an incredible week the last week has been around the Central Valley. We'll talk more about that. But let's go back to the beginning. If you're 95 years old, that means you were born way back in 1918, out in Oklahoma, huh?
I was born just 7 days before the end of World War II. One.
And this was Enid, Oklahoma?
Enid, Oklahoma. I was born on a farm, and the doctor didn't make it. My aunt delivered me.
Well, she must have done a good job if you've made it to 95.
Yep.
Did you grow up in a big family? Did you have brothers and sisters?
Two brothers. That's all.
If you're on a farm in Oklahoma and there's three brothers, I bet those three brothers have to do a lot of work.
Well, not exactly. I was 10 years old before my first brother showed up. 2 years later, my second brother showed up.
So the older brother has to do a lot of work. You?
Oh, I had to do the milking of the cows and so forth. I was on horseback once in a while and making hay once in a while. That was all the activities of being on a farm.
What was school like back then?
My dad also was taking care of wheat elevators, and he moved from one place to another, and so I moved to three different places from my first year in school. I was born in a German community, so I was like some of these Mexican people here around here that They probably didn't know a word of English before they went to school, and I didn't know a word of English before.
You grew up speaking German exclusively?
Exclusively, yeah. Our church was in German, and we had lots of activities among the German people, but I never learned a word of English.
When did you finally get fluent in English?
After my second year in first grade. They decided I hadn't learned enough in my first year, so they let me take the second year of my first grade.
And shortly after you finished high school, I know your family moved out here to California, ended up in Reedley. Was that because of the famous Dust Bowl that you moved out this way?
We moved here because my dad says, I cannot afford to send you to a university in Enid. So he says, I know that California, the less expensive. So we moved over to Reedley, and that was when I started my college career. It was Reedley JC for the first year, and then after that was Fresno State.
And what were your ambitions? Do you remember what you thought you might do with yourself? Did you have some big ideas, some big dreams?
I did. I had ambition to be a chiropractor because my uncle was a chiropractor. He had only 4 or 5 years of school. He accomplished a lot of things for people, including fractures. And I grew up thinking that the medical doctor took care of medicine, and he didn't do any fracture work. I started thinking that I was going to be taking care of fractures, and that's what I did end up doing a lot.
Well, you'd end up seeing a lot of gruesome things during World War II, but before we get to how you ended up in the Army, tell me about December 7th, 1941. Do you remember where you were and how you found out that America was under attack?
I had been married about 2 months before that happened. I expected to go into the service, but they told me that I was busy with blind riveting. It was individual riveting on planes that were being prepared for England, two engine bomber. So I was able to stay out of the service for about a year and a half.
Well, and a lot of people don't realize this. They think, well, Pearl Harbor brought America into the war. America wasn't officially into the war, but there are a lot of things happening in America that were contributing to what was going on around the world, and you were part of that. So you were in an aircraft factory in Southern California, yeah, helping build airplanes that the British were flying against, yeah, the Germans. What was that work like for you?
I enjoyed that I was able to stay with my wife because we hadn't been married very long, as you know. So I just thought that maybe I wouldn't have to go to the service at all, but they caught me.
It was during the time that you were working at the aircraft factory that Pearl Harbor happened. Did that create quite a buzz in the factory? I imagine that kind of changed people's perspective a little bit. You weren't just building things for England anymore. Now America was in this war.
I thought that we were doing our part in getting things ready to keep Germany from taking over.
Did it surprise you then when the Japanese attacked? Do you remember that making an impact on you?
The only thing that I can recall particularly was that we would have to darken the windows and be prepared in case Japan would come over and start bombing our area.
Was this a Lockheed factory or North American, or what was the aircraft company?
The aircraft company was called Vega. We were exactly 1 mile away from Lockheed. So Lockheed was building planes and we were doing the same thing.
Well, and I've talked to some people who were doing that, and one of the things that fascinates me, and you mentioned blacking out everything, I've read and seen pictures of the way that those aircraft factories were disguised, where they actually had stuff on top of the buildings to camouflage what they were. Do you remember that at all?
No, I just do not remember that. I didn't even know that happened.
You're just carrying your lunch pail and going to work, huh?
I guess so.
And another thing that comes to mind for me, knowing that you grew up speaking German, and I assume at this time you still understood plenty of German, a lot of people have said over the years they didn't realize what was going on with Hitler because they couldn't understand his ravings. They might hear the mania in his voice, but they didn't know what he was saying. Did you ever have occasion to hear or read the kinds of things that he was doing over there?
No, I read about it, but other than that, no, I don't recall hearing him.
You're working at the aircraft factory. You've got a wife of just a few months, and then you get drafted? Was that tough news to take?
Well, I told my wife she should go live with my parents in Fresno because we were living in North Hollywood and she was pregnant. So she had help because of my parents.
How hard was that to have to leave a pregnant wife not knowing if you're ever going to come back to see her again?
I don't remember that, any part of that. I just thought that it was my turn. That I just have to do what I was helpful in the service.
And how was it that you became a surgical technician? Is that something that you volunteered for or requested, or something that they figured out you had those skills?
Well, I'd had a couple of years of medical training in college, so they offered to let me work as a x-ray technician or as a surgical technician. So I chose the surgical, and they sent me to William Beaumont General Hospital near Mexico. So I had some training there, and the rest of the training came with me working for the surgeon.
And this was fairly early in the war that you were drafted. In fact, the first place you got sent was North Africa, is that right? What was that journey like from America to North Africa?
Well, I was in a big ship with about 5,000 soldiers that were replacing the ones that had... We were replacing the guys that had lost their life. So, Africa was no longer in war. We were there only about 6 weeks until... they needed to replace some of us, so we would go on. I know for myself, I was on a small ship,
going to Naples, and the front lines were just beyond Naples. We could see where the shooting was going on, and then at night the Germans would come over with their bombers, and they would disturb our sleeping, because they always came around 10 o'clock at night, and then again in the morning about 5:30. That would mean we would have to find shelter. We were about 3 blocks from Naples harbor. The Germans happened to hit one of our tankers, and we saw that explode, and that was kind of exciting. That's because it was pretty close.
Well, what goes through your mind here? You've got a pregnant wife back home. You're not sure if when you're going to be a father, if you're ever going to see this kid, and now there's stuff exploding right down the street from you. Were you scared at all?
I don't know that I was scared. I just part of life. It wasn't scary at all, I don't think.
Do you think your focus was different because your job was to help the wounded and help take care of injuries than it would have been had you been in the infantry or been firing at the enemy on a regular basis?
Oh, definitely. I was real happy to be in the position that I was in, and I'm sure that I thought about it. Right now, I don't remember that I particularly were scared. I suppose we would always run for cover if bullets that were dropping out of the sky were coming close, or we could hear it. So we would run for cover. And one of the things that was exciting, we had a lot of artillery from United States and two from France and two from Britain. Each country had their own tracer color, so it was kind of exciting to see 600 tracers going up in different colors. It was like fireworks, 4th of July, that's a little word. Okay.
But the reality is when all these tracers and 600 guns from the three different countries are going up, that's a lot of shrapnel that's going to be landing somewhere, and you might have some work to do, huh?
Well, I didn't at that time because I wasn't assigned to the particular company, and we were still in replacement areas. So what I was seeing was the excitement of, like you say, the shrapnel. When it started to rain down on us close by, well, then we would take off and get under cover.
How close did any of that come to you?
Well, I was real close. You could hear it. And it was coming down rapidly.
How do you keep your wits about you in a scene, a situation like that?
Every fight for himself. You're just not going to stand out there and let it rain down on top of you. No way.
So you were there in Italy from 1943 through the end of the war? Do I have that right?
And then soon after we had landed in Naples, we were sent to our particular company that we would be joining. We'd go by a small railroad because they had narrow railroad tracks and small freight trains. So we had, at night, we would sleep with one. Every other one was lying down on the floor facing the other way, against each other. It was so crowded that if one guy turned, well, everybody turned.
They actually moved the troops on those trains?
Yeah, well, from Naples, I went all the way across to Foggia, and it was going so slow that kids would come and try and sell us oranges, and we would trade oranges for sea rations, things of that we didn't particularly like, and they were happy to get some food other than having to eat oranges.
And Foggia was a major bomber base for American forces during this time. So you were there pretty much surrounded by airfields. I bet you saw quite a few bombers taken to the sky.
Usually about 200 when they would get ready to go bomb the Polizzi oil fields.
And I know you're getting emotional about that because that was one of the most devastating missions where the most planes and airmen were lost was the first raid on Ploesti.
Sometimes only half of them came back.
Since you were stationed there, I'm gathering that your job would be to treat those who came back wounded, but it sounds like it was harder to know that there were so many who didn't come back.
Yeah, that was terrible. One of the guys told me that He says, I just walked into the pilot's area of the ship, and where I had been standing just before, there was a hole. I looked back there, and there was a hole where I had been standing. I heard some pretty rough stories.
And I'm sure you saw some pretty rough stuff as you're working as a surgical technician. Tell us about the kinds of things you would have to do, the kinds of injuries and wounds that you saw, and how you dealt with that.
Well, my surgeon said, you're not good at doing suturing. So he says, you're not suturing any of our soldiers. Don't you dare do that. So I sutured kids that were playing in Foggia. There had been a lot of bombing, and so the kids would play hide and go seek, and then some of the walls would come down, and so forth. And so I would suture the kids, and the older men that had not gone through the service, I would take care of them too. But I didn't suture any soldiers. No soldiers.
Yeah, I guess the surgeon wanted to use his own touch on them. I know this is hard to talk about, and I think anybody out there listening can imagine why when you picture innocent children wounded by the weapons of war. 95-year-old Leonard Heinrichs of Dinuba, California is our guest today. We'll catch our first break now. Still to come, the decision he made later in the war that may just have saved his life, and also the experience of a lifetime he enjoyed with Central Valley Honor Flight. More of Hometown Heroes coming your way right after this. They say a picture is worth a thousand words, but when it comes to making my mouth water, I don't need a thousand words, just two of them. Mongolian beef. Okay, two more. Ming's Restaurant. And I guess if you want to know where to find it, I should give you two more. Las Banas. That's where I grew up. And I'm guessing Las Banas is somewhere you pass through every now and then. And if you drop in for the Mongolian beef, you might start calling it what I have for years. My favorite place to eat. Period. He may not look old enough for this to be true, but the owner, Paul Cito, has been working his magic in the kitchen there for 45 years now. It's all delicious. If you're a garlic fan, try the Baja shrimp and thank me later. But the Mongolian beef is absolutely unmatched. The flavor, incredible. The texture, tremendous. I can't do it justice with words. You just gotta go taste it. One word of caution, do not go on Monday because Ming's is closed on Mondays. So pick another day, tell them I sent you, and let me know if your taste buds enjoy it as much as mine do. That's Ming's Restaurant, 435 West Pacheco Boulevard in lovely Las Banas, California.
On the front line of freedom, you're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, visiting today with a World War II veteran who just celebrated his 95th birthday, Leonard Heinrichs, originally from Enid, Oklahoma. He makes his home now in Dinuba, California. Mr. Heinrichs was one of 69 World War II veterans who just participated in the inaugural Central Valley Honor Flight. We're going to discuss that before we're done today. He spent most of his time in World War II as a surgical technician in the area of Foggia, Italy. And he was sharing before the break how the surgeon that he worked under didn't want Leonard handling the sutures on soldiers, but he would let him handle civilian cases like young children and older folks. I know you lived it, but I think for a lot of other people, it's probably pretty jarring to imagine young, innocent children that are wounded because of a war that they have nothing to do with. Was that difficult for you to look at these children, imagine them maybe even as your own children, as you're trying to stitch them up and make them well?
Well, I enjoyed with the kids because I had to have a good time. When I first got there, there were very few people in Foggia. So the kids slowly, and the parents slowly came back into the town. It was a town of maybe, I would just guess that it would be about 30 to 35,000 was the population at the time when before the war. You know, I was with the aviation engineers, so we had equipment that made ditches. And in the beginning, we pushed the bodies into those ditches, and we didn't have any idea who they were, and they just had to be put away, because otherwise the bodies would begin to get real.
Yeah, they would start to decay, and
yeah,
and
yeah.
I'm sure you'd never dealt with anything like this before. How difficult was that to see all the death and destruction around you?
I don't think that I thought about that. I just had it had to be done.
Did you hear from home much? Did you get letters from your wife?
Oh, yeah. I remember one of the guys was kidding me, so I knocked him down, and he says, you know, you get upset real easy when you don't get any mail. Yeah, just had to have that one little thing, and that would encourage me. I didn't have a bad time over there. I wasn't in a lot of danger, so I just was hoping one of these days I'm going to go home again.
Did it ever wear on you, the work that you had to do, the amount of soldiers in certain conditions, or civilians, like you mentioned, to see so many of them hurting? Was that difficult?
I don't think so. It just had to be done.
Maybe it sounds too like that it was a source of fulfillment for you, or a source of pride, knowing that you were helping people.
Yeah, that's for sure. At least I was doing something positive. I was accomplishing something.
Are there specific faces that you remember of some of the people that you helped to treat? Are there certain circumstances that you felt really privileged to have been able to help them live through what they went through?
I was just part of the gang. The guys seemed to appreciate it.
And did you interact much with the bomber crews, the pilots and navigators and bombardiers and gunners? Did you spend much time around them?
Not really. On rare occasions. And then the only activity was taking care of the wounded. The engineers that I was with more than I was with the pilots, they made airfields in between the front lines sometimes, and I never offered to go. I could have, but one of the guys in our outfit knew Italian, so he would enjoy going along, and because they made the airfields at night in between the front lines. So, like I said, I never was in a lot of danger, but I was always looking forward to the time when I'd be going home.
Well, and eventually you would get to go home, but it took a pretty massive effort and a pretty massive sacrifice to make that possible. When you saw those friends of yours and the engineers and saw the runways they were able to hastily put together, sometimes under fire, when you saw the 200 bombers taking off at the same time, was it ever awe-inspiring? Was it ever impressive to you? Did you ever wonder at the magnitude of all of it?
The magnitude. Oh, yeah. Just amazed me that how many would be up there and getting into formation. And the man that replenished our supply of bombers, Jake Entz, he later on was the jeweler here in town. And he would know how many bombers had gone down, because he said, he knew that sometimes we would lose as half of the bombers. Usually not more than 30 to 40 bombers would go down at each time that we would send them out, but that's a lot.
And I understand one of the more, I guess, memorable, but also gruesome and difficult cases that you had as far as medical treatment was someone whose scalp you had to stitch up. What's the story there?
Yeah. The worst case I had where I did the suturing was a man that had working on the roof, and he bent the metal roofing in such a way that he scraped his scalp. And he just pulled the skin off of the scalp to at least half of the scalp was laying it back. So that was most interesting, because that was the worst case of suturing that I had to do.
This was an Italian civilian?
Italian, older gentleman, yeah.
So you had, his scalp was basically a flap on top of his head, and you had to sew it back on?
Yeah, it just had to flap it back and clean it up first. And then anyway, that was most interesting. The kids never got hurt real bad, at least the ones that I saw.
I bet the kids liked you. If you were the guy that fixed them up, I bet they were real smiley at you.
Yeah. Once in a while, I would be in an ambulance, and the kid would wave at me, and I felt good about it.
I know all of this is emotional, and you talked earlier about when you were growing up and speaking only German, that you had to speak German in church. Here, you've got a wife back home. You've got all this crazy stuff around you. You're seeing these incredible cases of injuries and wounds. Was your faith something that you found solace in? Is this a situation where you found yourself praying a lot over there?
Oh, yeah. I've always went to activity like a church service. We would sometimes have that. And I would sing in the choir if they had any choir. And felt a real comfort in knowing that God answered my prayers. That was real, real good.
Were there any specific times where you really felt that he was protecting you, that things could have been different for you had he not been protecting you?
Well, just a matter of time that I felt like, well, at least God is with me if I didn't have any protection or any other way. I was enjoying real fellowship with my Lord.
You were pretty sure you were going to come home?
Yeah, under the circumstances where I was, yeah. My surgeon would give me privileges that some of the other guys didn't have. And I went to the front lines to see my friend that I had grown up with in German area early in my life. And I found out through my parents, they got the address for me through some of their friends. And so I hitchhiked to Rome, and then hitchhiked to Florence. And then the front line was just a little ways over the hill. So I visited him by hitchhiking on a big truck. They were getting big boulders to be making a bridge. I don't know why I thought that he wouldn't stop because he had so many big lumber trees. But he stopped, and he would stop at every sentry until we got to the same place, to the place where this guy was had been in front lines. But they pulled back for 3 days. So I stayed with him for about a day and a half. And he says, "You want to experience the front lines?" And I said, "Well, sure."
What were you thinking?
I don't know. So the commander says of his outfit, said, "Well, he'll become a member of our outfit." He says, if he wants to see the front lines, that's okay. But he says, we're going to push into Pole Valley. And we're not coming back for they usually would come back for a few days and once in a while. He says, "Nope, that's not going to happen." So I of course just told him no. Anyway, I went along with him close to the front lines in a half track. You know what that is? Oh yeah, okay. And then they didn't even stop to let me out. I had a roll out. And so then there I was in the middle of no place. And all of a sudden, here comes a guy on a Jeep. And he took me along back to Florence. Oh, and then this friend of mine wrote back to me. He says, you would be dead." And he says, if you had stayed with me, because he said, guys on either side of him had been killed. Yeah. So I would have been one of those dead people.
And that means that four of your children and a bunch of grandkids and great-grandkids would have never been born had that happened.
Yeah.
But your first son was born while you were still overseas. Did you find out while you were in Italy that you were a daddy?
Oh, yeah, I did. I found out that everybody else did, too. Everybody else found out. And then one of the other guys, he says, well, I just became a daddy, too. He says, my wife is, he was from Virginia, and he was hadn't had too many years in school. And he says, you know, I've been gone for 14 months, and he says, I just became a daddy. and he meant every bit of it. He just.
And I'm sure you didn't ruin it for him, right?
No way. No way. Yeah.
But your math was a little better. And I imagine that gave you another reason to hurry home if that was possible. Not that you had much of a choice, huh?
I didn't have a choice. And I was put in charge of the dispensary at my after my surgeon had enough points to go home. So I was in charge of the dispensary for 4 months before I had a chance to go home. Whatever, I had learned how to do some of the smaller surgeries, and so if I didn't feel like I was competent, though, I could always send them to the station hospital.
Do you remember when you found out the war in Europe was over and what that meant to you?
Yeah. There were the people in the town. Oh, my, they all came out on the street. They were so happy and so, even though we had been against war, had war against Italy and some of their relatives, but they still appreciated the fact that the war was over, even though there were very few men of certain ages that were there, why they were real tickled so that we had finally won the war.
And I'm sure for you that meant you knew it was closer to coming home.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Well, how about we find out what that was like when we come back. 95-year-old Leonard Heinrichs of Dinuba, California is telling us his story today. Remember, if there's a veteran in your life that you want me to try to catch up with, you can let me know through the Hometown Heroes Facebook page or just email me, paul@hometownheroesradio.com. I hope that as we're in the midst of Veterans Day weekend, you will take the time to thank all the veterans in your life. We cannot take our freedom or the price that's been paid for it for granted. Back with the rest of Mr. Heinrichs' story after this, including the recent chapter with Honor Flight and also a bit of a buried treasure mystery. We'll get to that when Hometown Heroes continues after this. If you are a World War II veteran and you have not been to the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C., Honor Flight wants to take you there, free of charge. The sooner you submit an application, the sooner Honor Flight can get you to your memorial. In Kern County or the Central Coast, call Lily Marsh at 661-544-VETS. That's 661-544-VETS. Or go to honorflightkerncounty.org. For Fresno, Madera, Merced, Mariposa, Kings, or Tulare counties, check out CV Honor Flight, CV as in Central Valley, CVHonorFlight.org, or call Al Perry at 559-970-9853. That's 559-970-9853. Maybe you're the son or daughter of a veteran and you'd like to go along as a guardian. There are applications for that too, and there are other ways you can help. Donations to Honor Flight are tax deductible. We all owe our freedom and liberty to the men and women who put their lives on the line for it. Let's all come together now behind Honor Flight and give our veterans one more tour with honor.
This is Hometown Heroes, honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, reminding you that no matter where you come from in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are men and women there. There are heroes down the street, maybe right next door, who have risked their lives for the sake of your freedom. On the recently completed inaugural journey of Central Valley Honor Flight, 69 World War II veterans from 15 different hometowns in Central California got to experience the National World War II Memorial. And I'll tell you, I don't know if I have ever been more proud to be from this area than I was watching the way these men were welcomed home at the Fresno Yosemite International Airport. I think for all of us who were there, it really exceeded expectations. You didn't know what that was going to be like until you were there to feel it. And the goosebumps got a little bigger even at the sold-out Fresno State football game against Nevada, when a halftime tribute to those veterans elicited an extended standing ovation from 41,000 people, and even an impromptu chant of USA, USA, started by the student section. Maybe you're one of those people who took time to be at the airport to welcome them home, or maybe you're one of the many who found a way to support our effort with time or money or energy. It's truly been amazing to see a dream turn into reality and to see that this is something all of us can agree on. It really is inspiring. And we're just getting started. I don't want to get carried away here. I just wanted to say thanks. So thank you for allowing us to say thank you to these veterans in such a powerful way. Our guest today is one of those veterans, 95-year-old Leonard Heinrichs of Dinuba. And it's been at times a pretty emotional conversation. You've heard a few pauses in moments where Mr. Heinrichs got a little choked up. And maybe you would too if you had been a surgical technician in the war and had to witness the unintended consequences, the battle wounds he had to try to stitch up on innocent children around Foggia, Italy, where he was stationed, the moment in which he decided not to accompany a friend to the front lines, only to hear later that the men on either side of that friend had perished. There are plenty of things that leave Mr. Heinrichs feeling pretty blessed. And when we left off, he was saying how much he was hoping just to come home. He had left behind a pregnant wife when he headed overseas, and his firstborn son would be 18 months old by the time Leonard made it back to the States after World War II. When did you finally get to come home, and what was that like?
They told me that If we would take our equipment and medicine along, we would have a hard time getting it all in shape. So it would take us longer before we would be asked to come home. So what we did, we had a great chest about that size. We had a lot of equipment, medicine, and stuff, just medical supplies
that you would stash in theirs.
We also had some German Luger or two, and had a couple of other equipment that we were going to take home, and then we decided we wouldn't take a chance that we wouldn't get on that ship. So we were near a farm. And that farm had one tree in more or less in the center of the farm. And we went to that place and dug a hole and buried that trunk with all the equipment. And then about a few years later, I took my family out there, and you know, that tree was gone. They had no way of finding out where that trunk was. Because I thought, sure, I was going to get a German Luger, and I was going to get some other things. I had no way of finding out where that was.
So either some Italian farmer found a great surprise, or that's still buried somewhere, huh?
Yeah, he did.
Or you think it's possible that it still might be buried out there somewhere? Or you think when they dug the tree up, it came up?
We really buried it good, so it may still be there.
Sounds like you weren't too worried about it when you knew you would get to see your wife and meet your son for the first time. What I can't imagine, you know, just being a father, I can't imagine what that feels like to meet for the first time a child that's already a year and a half. What was that like for you?
Well, of course I was happy to see him, but I think I wasn't much of a father in the beginning. I don't think I was as kind to him as I should have been, because I thought he should respond to my wanting to him to do things. And I would sometimes take naps at noon, and we were living close to where they were training soldiers. So
One time when I was taking a nap, the sergeant calls out, "Attention!" And man, I was standing beside my bed.
Old habits die hard, huh?
Just all of a sudden, I was there, always ready.
When you think back on World War II and what you experienced and what you know about how many Americans were wounded, were killed, what it took to win that war, what would you say that stands out to you that you're most proud of or most satisfied with your involvement in it?
We thought this was a war to win. To end all wars. We thought surely we would have learned. But we didn't, did we? Just didn't. We didn't. So I am just happy that I had the experience, but I'm also happy that I had the experience of having a family that I grew up with and enjoyed. I'm happy to live in a land of freedom.
Well, you just came back from a pretty good birthday trip, I guess. Tell me about your experience with Central Valley Honor Flight and what you got out of it.
I was never expected to get as much out of it. I thought, well, I'll go and see a monument. So when I go see a place where I don't have anybody to guide me and there's just a lot of enjoyment to see the things that I can see. But here we had a guide, people to tell us things that we enjoyed hearing, and it was just wonderful. It was just awesome.
And they didn't build that memorial till 9 years ago. So you and most of those guys on that trip had never seen it before. To see that memorial in the field of gold stars for the 405,000 Americans who didn't come home, what was that like for you to be in that place at that moment with all those other veterans?
I used the word awesome in it, and I can't say it often enough. It's just wonderful to be in this land of freedom. It's just awesome.
I know your guardian for this trip was a friend of mine, Red Estes. He and his wife both went as guardians.
Yeah.
I saw a couple good pictures of you guys on the trip. It seemed like you two had a little fun out there.
Yeah.
What did you appreciate about his work as your guardian?
I told him that he went way over. He did over and above helping me to enjoy the time we were there. He's a solid citizen. He sure is.
Did you make some friends with all those other veterans on the trip?
I think, yeah. We were enjoying each other's fellowship, but no, I didn't make any close friends except the Red and his wife. They are so, they mean a lot to me.
I think they'd say the same. I just saw the birthday card they just sent you. And on that birthday card, there's a picture of you with lipstick on your cheek. Tell us where that came from.
People would say, would thank us. And this one lady, she just determined, I think she put on extra lipstick and then came over and kissed me on my cheek. And she did not only do it she had, I think, at least two other guys that I saw. They were kidding me that they were going to tell my wife or my daughter. And I said, you just go right ahead. That was great. That was good.
And I know on the trip home, you guys had some special packages to open, too. Tell me about that.
I didn't expect to have a mail call again. I had never had that since I was in the service. 10 different letters that came from people that were thanking me. So it brought back memories of a real mail call. Yeah, that's for sure.
Did all of this make you understand how appreciated you are? Because I'm sure there's times that you maybe didn't realize how much other people appreciate you and your generation and what you did. Did you feel that?
Yeah. Coming home the other time, There was just no activity like that. No sign of people appreciating having been there.
So you were a little surprised by how many people were waiting for you at the airport?
Oh, I thought half of Fresno was there. Oh my goodness! All these soldiers standing along the wall, and all the music and the people that I knew. There was one of the guys that I knew that was in with our group, and his wife was standing there, and it was amazing. My brother and his wife were there, and super. It was super.
So if there's a veteran out there listening right now that's heard about it but isn't sure if he wants to go on honor flight, do you have any words for him?
I think he shouldn't miss it. Man, it's far beyond the normal. You may think like I did that I would go and see the monument, but there's more to it. A lot more.
Is there anything else that I haven't asked you about that you think we ought to know?
I think we covered it.
Well, I want to say thank you for serving our country. Thank you for telling us about it. Thank you for being part of our inaugural Central Valley Honor Flight. And look forward to number 96, right?
Oh, yeah, number 96. Well, I was thinking it's about time to go. But you don't have those choices. So anyway, I'm appreciate all the effort made to let us enjoy this time like this. It was just great.
So glad to hear you say that. That is Leonard Heinrichs of Dinuba, California. Just celebrated his 95th birthday, and there are 5 children and more than 20 grandkids and great-grandkids who say, it's not time to go just yet. Don't be in a hurry now. I'm sure between now and the next mission for Central Valley Honor Flight in March, we'll be hearing more stories from some of the 69 men who made that trip. Next week, we're going to hear from a female veteran of World War II. You're thinking maybe she was a wave or in the wax or maybe even the wasps, or maybe you don't know what any of those are. But nope, she wasn't any of those. She was one of the first women to serve in the U.S. Marine Corps. She just turned 90, and I'm not exaggerating when I say she'd pass for 70. So that's going to be pretty fun next time around. I'm probably going to be preaching to the choir here, but how about making sure Veterans Day is more than just a day off from work or school? Take some time out of your day to honor those who have paid for the freedom we so easily take for granted. If you're in Kern County, they're in Bakersfield, get out to 21st and L in downtown Bakersfield by 10 a.m. to experience the Veterans Day parade there. If you're listening today on the Central Coast, there are lots of great ways to honor our veterans, like at 11 a.m., the Veterans Day celebration on the pier at Pismo Beach. Think about how clean and safe and peaceful that beach is, and reflect on the contrast to beaches 70 years ago in places like Tarawa, Iwo Jima, Okinawa, and of course, Normandy. If you're around Fresno, maybe I'll see you at the West Coast's largest Veterans Day parade. Or actually, maybe I won't see you because I may have a little tunnel vision watching my daughters march with their cheerleader friends in the Fresno Veterans Day Parade. Whatever your hometown is, make sure those heroes know you haven't forgotten what they've done and what so many continue to do today. Thanks for listening to Hometown Heroes. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.